Today's shiur is dedicated by Dr. Yosef and Mrs. Yael Gurevich in honor of their grandparents, Mr. and Mrs. Moshe Rubin. Today's shiur is for Zchus for Refuah Shleima for Shalom Ben Bracha. Today's shiur is Masechta Ksubos Daf Pei Gimel, and we will begin on Daf Pei Gimel Amud Aleph at the new perek. Says we know that the Chazal gave the husband, as we've been discussing many times, the right to eat the peiros of the nechsim log. And the reason Chazal gave the husband that right is because if chas v'shalom, his wife were to be kidnapped, he would have the obligation to redeem her, to ransom her. So says the Mishnah, kosev l'ishtei, if somebody writes to his wife, din idvarim ein li menachosayich, I'm giving up my rights in your property. Hareza oichel peiros b'chaya. The halacha is that he continues to eat the peiros as long as she's alive. V'meisa, and if his wife passes away, yarshab, that he will continue to have the right to yarshin his wife. So as we just said, the halacha is that making this kind of declaration really doesn't have any halachic validity. Says the Gemara, says the Mishnah, Im Kain. So if that's the case, what does it accomplish? Lama Kosla didn't varm elim in the Chasayich. What does he accomplish with this statement? That in Nosna, if she sells this property, or Nosna, she gives the property away as a gift, Kayim, the halacha is that would be considered a valid transaction. So, of course, what we need to understand is on one side, we say that he hasn't ceded any rights to this property. And on the other side, he still gets to eat the peiros. On the other hand, he has given up the rights. Normally, of course, a wife does not have the right to sell lechsim alug because the peiros belong to the husband. And here, we do. So the Chiddush HaRim answers in the following fashion. He says that the way we look at this takona, as we started the shiur, that Chazal did on his behalf, is in an interesting fashion. The Chiddush HaRim explains that there are two parts to it. One part is that whatever property the nechsim melug, the wife has, the husband has a right to eat the peiros. But that doesn't mean she's obligated to have nechsim melug, which it also means that she could say that as long as she sells it, which she gives her the permission to sell, then the halacha is it's a valid sale. But as long as she has it, the peiros belong to him. Kosla, if he writes, didn't dvarim ein li menachosayich or peiros sehem, so he added the word peiros sehem, hareze en oichel peiros b'chayam, the halacha that he gets to eat the peiros doesn't apply anymore. He won't be allowed to eat the peiros. However, in Mesa, were she to die, that halacha that he's hayarish continues. Rabbi Yehuda Aima, even if he wrote dinner dvarim ein li menachosayich peiros sehem, he oichel peiros. The halacha still will be that he's allowed to eat the peiros. That means if she were to sell the peiros that grew from this field and bought with those peiros another piece of property, those peiros of the second piece of property, the husband would be right to eat because he only wrote peiros sehem. He didn't write peiros sehem. Until, in order for him to seize all rights completely, the way he could do so is only by saying, and he added the words, that he's ceding his rights both when she's alive and no longer alive, then the halacha will be en oichel peiros b'chayah. He doesn't get to eat any peiros while she's alive. And furthermore, v'meisa, when she passes away, ein yarsha. Even though, as we've been learning, the halacha is that the husband is the yarsha of the wife, here he won't be the yarsha of the wife. Shimon Gamliel Aimer, even if he wrote this, even if he made this very strong statement, we write where he said, "Ainly dinat varm, ainly ben chasayich, bechayich v'meisayich." The halacha is a meisay yirshena. The halacha that the husband yarshens the father, the wife, is midaraisa, as the Rishonim point out, based on the Gemara Masechta Baba Basra, Daf Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Beis, the pasuk says, "L'sheira hakar v'lov." We learn that the husband is the Yorish of a wife. And once the halacha says that he is her Yorish, making any declaration contrary to that is making a stipulation which is contrary to Torah law. And the halacha is a call, if somebody makes a tenai contrary to Torah law, the halacha of Shin Gamaliel teaches us is to know batal. The Ran says that this discussion that we're having in our mission now, when, under what circumstances, this type of a statement will be considered halachically valid, says the Ran, is only when she's already a rusa. But let's say this woman is not his arusa, so there's no way that this statement, says the Ran, could have any validity, because only when he has a relationship with this property that this woman and is already his arusa, which we often discuss in our shiurim, halachically they're considered like an eshes ish, that's when that type of a statement could be valid. But if she's not an arusa, so he has no connection to this property. Since he has no connection to this property, no halachic connection to this woman, he can't make those statements. So, in other words, the Ramah and Evan Ezra Siman Tzadik Beis Sif Aleph points out that there are three stages. Before this Erisin, it doesn't make a difference what he says and how he says it. The statement doesn't have any halachic validity. While she's an Arusa, it will be valid. And as we're going to learn in the Gemara, right, in a moment, it doesn't even require a kinyan. Just making the statement is adequate. After the Nesu'in, for the statement to have validity, he had to have made a kinyan. The question that needs to ask, what if, as she's an Arusa, and he makes the statement, on what properties that this woman owns is the statement valid? Is it only on property that she already, only on property that she only owns now, or even property that will come to her later on after the Nesu'in, that the statement that has been made will be relevant to all properties? The Shulchan Aruch brings two opinions in this question, and he actually, the Rishonim say that it's a machloik, the Mefarshim say the Beis Shmuel in the Shulchan Aruch, and Siman Tzadik Beis Sif Beis says it's actually a machloik, represents a machloikus Rishonim. What is the machloikus Rishonim based on? What does it mean when a husband is mesalik himself? Is it mean that the husband's saying that this right that the Torah gave me, I, under the proper circumstances and under the proper conditions, have a right to walk away from that right that the Torah gave me? If that's what he meant, so then even though she didn't own the properties yet, it doesn't make a difference, because he's walking away from a right. He's not walking away from a specific piece of property. If, however, we understand it that he's walking away from property, he only can walk away from property that she has. Property that she doesn't have, he can't walk away from. So our Mishnah and Gemara are teaching us a new concept. The concept is siluk. A person could walk away from his right. And the question is, when is siluk valid? As we just discussed, siluk is only valid if there's a relationship. And that's why they're not even, as we just discussed, not even an orus and arusa. So there's no way that he could walk away from something that he doesn't have. So there's an interesting shaila. What's going to be the halacha if somebody wants to walk away from an inheritance that he's entitled to? Can he be mesalik from that? Because at that point, he's not a Yairish. A Yairish only happens, he is a Yairish in a conceptual sense, but he's not an inheritor, he's not an heir until the person who he's inheriting from is not alive anymore. And as if we understand it, and this is the Ktsois' explanation, the Ktsois says, as we just discussed, when he's an Oris, he has a connection with this woman. But before the person who he's inheriting passed away, he has no connection. So the question will be, and that's why the Ktsoi says that a Yairish, before the person who he wants to inherit, who he's going to inherit from, passed away, cannot be Masalik. What would be another interesting question? What would be the halacha that given he learned the husband learned the Mishnah and he does the Siluk in the proper fashion, and then he changes his mind? That, does he have the right? Does he still have the ability to do? Can he change his mind? The Marit says the halacha is very often in Shas Asi Dibur Umavatal Dibur, and he could reverse his position. The Ktsoi says that he can't reverse his position. And perhaps the machloikus of the Marit and the Ktsoi is very much connected to the discussion that we just had a moment ago. How do we look at Siluk? Do we look at Siluk as a person walking away from his rights? If we look at Siluk as a person walking away from his rights, once he walked away from those rights, they're no longer his. And there's no way for him to regret that decision. If, however, the halacha looks at Siluk not as walking away from rights, it's only walking away from a piece of property. So every day that the husband is the husband of this wife, he's entitled to the nechsei milug of that property. And therefore the siluk of every day is a new siluk. And just because he was misalk himself, just because he separated himself at one point, does not mean that he has to remain permanently misulik, permanently separated from the property. It says the Gemara Tanur of Chiyo, that means our Mishnah began that how was the siluk performed? By kaisiv, by writing it. Says the Gemara, if somebody says to his wife that he's walking away from the property, the halacha is that it's also considered a valid way of being misalk himself. Ask the Gemara, the kikosel hachi. So this seems to indicate that if all somebody did was just write the wording that we learned in our Mishnah where it's effective, it would mayhavi that it would be valid. Ask the Gemara, why would we think the writing is sufficient? Vatanya, haven't we learned in a brisa? Haim l'chaveri, somebody says to somebody else, din advar ma'en li asad azu, I don't want to have any issue with this field. En li esikba, I have no business with it. Yadam selects me menu, or I separate myself from this field. L'amaklum, because in all these cases, it's inadequate to show that he's separated himself completely from the field. So the question is, just writing shouldn't be sufficient and speaking shouldn't be sufficient. Amrit Be'er Rabbi Yonai. So they answered that our Mishnah is referring to a situation because of Lava Oida Varusa, that he did the siluk when she was an Arusa. And since she was only a Arusa, his connection to the field was a much weaker connection because Rav Kahana, taught us, Damar Rav Kahana, Nachla Bala Adam in Makam Acher, and a Yerusha that comes to somebody else through an external activity. For example, the Yerusha that a husband yashins his wife is not a Yerusha that he's entitled to because he was born to a certain person or because he was born into a certain family. It's because he chose to marry this woman, or the master loves she Yishana. That case of a husband can make it tonight that he don't want it to work. Ukudarava, as Rava taught us, if somebody says, I I don't want to take advantage of the tekaron chachamim they did on my behalf. Kigoyin zu, and the Gemara will explain in a second what kigoyin zu means. Shemun loy, we fulfill what he says. Ask the Gemara immediately, my kigoyin zu, what does that mean? Says the Gemara, kerev hunam arav. Damar hunam arav, yichoy lishish tam lebala. Chazal, we learned many times in a mesechta, said that a husband must support his wife, and in exchange, the wife turns over her earnings to her husband. A woman has a right to say, "Ainin azaynus ve'ainin aisa. I don't want to be supported, and I don't want to have to turn on my wages." Many reasons. One reason is because the wife says, "My wages are worth more than the support, so I'm forgiving the support." Another reason is, as we learned earlier in Amasechta, there are very clear guidelines what support means, what the husband has to give, and what he doesn't have to give. And this wife claims that this support isn't adequate for her. And that's why the halach is that any right that Chazal gave to a husband, the halach is that the wife can walk away if they made something for her benefit, and so too may the husband walk away if it's to his benefit. In our case, when they made something in his benefit, and that's why the siluk is effective. So we learned first the Gemara said because law be oidarusa, and as we explained, because ksiva or amira are very weak ways of accomplishing something, only when she's an arusa, where their relationship is not that strong, that's when he can walk away. If their relationship was stronger, then with Nisuan, they cannot walk away. So the Gemara says, "Nachla bal adam mi'achmen kan," the husband, that "Nachla bal adam mi'achmen," a person can walk away. What's the chiddush? Because the chiddush is that even though the Yerusha has not yet come, the halacha is that still the husband can walk away, because it's a special right that Chazal gave him, not something that he was born with that right. And that's why, explains Duran, the way we just learned, the halacha would be that a son cannot divest himself of the right to inherit his father, because even before the father died, that right exists, and siluk is ineffective in dispossessing oneself from something that you already own. The Ran adds another condition for siluk. He says that if a man declares prior to Kedushin that he wants to relinquish his right to inherit his wife-to-be, his declaration is ineffective because we said it's a davar shelo bala olam. So according to this, the only time for Chassan to be able to be Masalik himself is while there's Erisin. Before Erisin, it's not effective, it's premature. After Erisin, it's too late. And therefore, since it's too late, it would not be effective, because that's like a right that a husband has, like a son has. And in fact, in the world that we live in, where Erisin and Nisun are done essentially simultaneously, we don't have a situation where women are arusis. We do the chuppah, we have the brichas erisin, and immediately afterwards we have the nesuin. It wouldn't be possible unless one would want to stop after the brichas erisin under the chuppah and do so. The Torah tells us that Esav sold his bechira to Yaakov. Asked Rivash, how was that valid? At that time, the Bechayru was not yet in Esav's hands. And we've been discussing that a Dov Shalab al-Oilam, one can't be Masalik himself. Answers the Ketzos HaChayshin that what Esav did was not sell the Bechayru. What Esav did was be Masalik himself. That is possible, suggests the Ketzos, for one to do before that. That is possible to do. But ask the Ketzos, we just said, and that's the way the Pasha Peshat in our Gemara seems to be, that the only time by Yerusha Siluk would be effective is only by an Arusa, by the relationship. Durant said two conditions. Number one, the Gemara said, because it's not an inherent Yerusha. It's only a Yerusha because of his wife to whom he married, not something that he has because of the family he comes from. And second of all, because it was only when she was an Arusa. So ask the Ktzais, how could Esav relinquish the Chelek Bechor? Says the Ran, says the Ktzais, that indeed we're learning now, the Ran is saying, that one can't be Mesalk himself from the Yerusha. But what one can be Mesalk from himself, says the Ktzais, is from the Chelek Bechor. Esav was not Mesalk himself from the Yerusha. Esav was Mesalk himself from the Bechayra. A Silik from the Bechayra, says the Ktzais, is different than a Silik from the Yerusha, and therefore that could be relinquished. So now in Al Gemara, we just learned the rule that he Efshar B'Takanas Chachamim, if somebody wants to make a declaration that Chazal gave me a right and I want to walk away from it, the halacha is that you can walk away. There's an interesting question. Does this halacha apply by all Takanas Chachamim? We learned at the beginning of the Masechta, under certain circumstances, where a chassan, a kala, Rachman al Tzlan, become avelim, when can they walk away from, when could they have the Sheva Brachas and then the Avelis, etc. And let's say, particularly in the world we live in, where Sheva Brachas can be prepared, and Rachman al Tzlan, a kala becomes a avela, a chassan becomes an oval. And instead of saying, well, we'll do the Sheva Brachas, and then we'll sit down for avelis after the Sheva Brachas, they'd rather have the avelis together with the rest of their family who are avelim, and then they'll have the Sheva Brachas a week after. We learned at the beginning of the Masechta that this rule, that they have the Sheva Brachas and then the avelis, was made for the benefit of the Chassan Kala. So what would be the halacha, the Chroidim debate, if the Chassan Kala said, we're willing to forgo the special privilege that Chazal gave us? It's a very interesting discussion in the Paiskim, and most Paiskim obviously say that this rule that you could say, Efshar B'Takanas Chachamim, is not something that can be said indiscriminately in all situations. Ask the Gemara, if that's the case, that one can be Mesalk himself, Yehochi, I feel Nesu Nami. Why by Nesu can he not make such a statement? Answers the Gemara, Amra Abai ben Nesu, once the husband and wife have Nesuin, Yodai ki Yodai. He's considered a full-fledged partner in this property, and therefore, since he's considered a full-fledged property, even though we're learning in our Shir, there is a concept of Dinah Dvarim, but we also learned that partners cannot be Mesalik themselves just this way. And once there's Nesuin, they're ready in that category, and they can't walk away. Rav Amar, Rav says actually, not only are they Nesuin, are they considered full-fledged partners, the husband and the wife, and therefore it's Yodai ki Yada. It's actually Yodai Adifa mi Yada. He's the senior partner. Ask the Gemara, so what's the difference if they're equal or he's greater? Answered the Gemara, Nafkamina the Shemeres Yovim. If a woman died and a husband died without children, and we discussed in our previous shiurim that she's waiting for Shemeres Yovim, and she owns property, and she died while she's a Shemeres Yovim, and we had a Machlok B'Sham Beis Hillel who inherits that property. Beis Sham holds the Har Yarshim and her husband's Yarshim share that Yerusha. Beis Hillel say it depends which type of property. The Nichse Tzoyim Barzel stay wherever they are. The Ksuba goes to the Yarshi Abal. The Nichse Melo go to the Yarshi to Har Yarshim. And Abai is speaking about a case that she became the owner of property while they were married. Well, she was married to her first husband. So according to Abaya, Yodai Ki Yodai, they're equal partners, and therefore, when she passes away under the circumstances we just described, if she passes away while she was a Shemeres Yavam, since they're equal partners according to Abaya, the two Yarshim, her Yarshim and her husband's Yarshim, will divide this property equally. But Rava, who holds that Yodai Adifa Miyodai, the property that they got while they were married, his position is stronger than her position, and therefore, according to Rava, his Yarshim will get that property. Ibailuhu. Now we have a new question. We've been speaking till now that the way the husband relinquished his right was by saying dina dvarim, by saying it, by writing it. But now the question the Gemara poses, konami yodimahu, if in addition to just making the statement, he made a kinyan. And now the question is, maybe through making a kinyan, things will, since they made a kinyan, that shows that he's much more, it's a much stronger act of relinquishing his right. And since it's a much stronger act of relinquishing his right, he'll always be able to do so. And even, and as Taisa says, even though we've been learning till now in the Gemara that by Nesua saying Din Advarim, it will not be effective, maybe if he made a kinyan, then it would be effective. Or, I saw another pshat that the Rishonim point out, we learned in our Mishnah that under certain circumstances, making the statement really wouldn't make a difference. But now the Gemara is saying that if every time the statement was made, there was a kinyan attached to the statement, maybe then it will be effective. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, v'din advarim konam yodai. The halacha is, all he wanted to do with the kinyan was just strengthen the words, the statement of din advarim. And therefore, when din advarim are not effective, the halacha is, the kinyan wouldn't help it anymore. Rav Nachman Amar, that the person, when he's doing the kinyan, what he's trying to do is walk away from the entire piece of property. Since he's walking away from the entire piece of property, that's why even in cases where din advarim may not be effective, here it will be effective. But I saw the Rishonim point out, even if we're going to take Rav Nachman's approach that gives the kinyan a lot of strength, still, if he would do so before they were arusa, then it still won't be helpful. And the reason is, as we keep on repeating, because before she's an arusa, he has absolutely no connection to this piece of property. Since he has absolutely no connection to this piece of property, the kinyan can't make it any helpful. Amr, Abaye, Mistabra, Milsad, Rabbi Yosef. It makes more sense to follow the opinion of Rabbi Yosef. Explain, Ba'ayr, in a case where somebody else is coming to make a claim on the field, and he says that all he meant to do was walk away from the property, that Aval, Ba'ayr, if somebody remains quiet, that if he's questioning what he said, Aval, Ba'ayr, if he made a statement and he stuck to the statement, everybody will agree, Magufa Shalkarka Konami Yodai, he walked away from the field. And indeed, says the Gemara, Omar Ameima Hilchasa, Magufa Shalkarka Konami Yodai, that he walked away from the property. So the way we just explained the Gemara, Rashi explains that if he, after he did the kinyan, somebody else comes to take hold of his property, the kinyan will not be any more of a proof that person should have a right to the property. But if he doesn't say anything, it's a proof that he is interested in holding what he just said, and therefore it will be what he said stands under all circumstances. Amalei Rav Ashi LaMeimah. So Meimah just made a statement that when you made a kinyan, Megufa Shekakra Kana Miyadai. Ask the Gemara, what do we mean? What did I mean? What did a Meimah mean to say? Ba'ir or Ba'imid? Did a Meimah say that the kinyan gives this statement strength? Did he only say it in a case where Oymid, he's sticking to what he said? Or is he saying even in the case of Oyver? Ask the Gemara, Lamai Nafkamina. What's the Nafkamina? Says the Gemara, L'Chereb Yosef. If we say in a case that where he's Ma'ara on the kinyan, when he complains to the kinyan, the halacha is then maybe there it won't be valid. Or maybe under all circumstances it will be valid. Amalei, so Amalei responded to Ravashla, Shmili Klemele Sfirilei. And I don't agree with any nafgamina, and Kenyan makes it strong. We learned in the Mishnah, HaKaisel Ishto didn't Dvarim Elim Ben Chesayich. If he made this statement, the statement really had no strength. He continues to eat Paris. If his wife dies, he continues to yarshen her. If he wrote it, what is the purpose? If it accomplishes nothing, so Gemara said it. The Mishnah said it accomplishes that much that if she sells it, the sale is valid. So ask the Gemara. Tamele, become merely selected nafshich. If we say that the halacha is giving some strength to the statement. And that's why if the wife were to sell this property, we're learning the sale is a valid sale. So why can't the wife say, let's give this statement a lot of strength and that you completely walked away? Answers the Gemara, Amar Abaya, we have a rule, Yad Baal Shtar Al Tachtoina. That means that whenever you, if somebody brings a shtar, that somebody else owes him money. But the shtar is not clear. The shtar is ambiguous. His rights of collection are weakened. And therefore here too, since the person said dinat dvarim, and we don't know exactly how far he meant to relinquish. So yad baal shtar tachtoina, and we give it the most limited right. The interesting discussion that the Chazanish says, so here the Gemara is saying that since the statement was somewhat, as we've been learning throughout our shir, a weak statement, so we define it in the weakest way possible. So ask the Chazanish, what will be if the husband is standing here, and he says, well, what I meant was to give it, to make it a very strong statement. What would the halacha be then? So it's interesting that the Chazanish says, if that's what the husband says, we'll accept what the husband says. That the entire discussion, says the Chazanish, of our Mishnah and Gemara is only a case where he's not saying what he meant, or he's saying I meant it in the most limited fashion. But if he indeed says I meant it to be a very broad statement, we will accept it as a broad statement. But ask the Gemara, why do we say that it means that he's relinquishing the right, that the wife should be able to, that the wife now could sell it, maybe we should define that what he means to say is miperi, that he's relinquishing the right to get peyrets. Answers the Gemara Amar Abaya, Betzina Tav Mikra. When a person has an option to have a small cucumber, but he has it in his hand, or he has a lot, or he can wait till it grows and becomes a big cucumber, he's rather to take what is certain than to wait for it's not certain. And here too also, he selling it, we don't know if the wife's going to sell it. Maybe she will, maybe she won't. And therefore, he'd rather relinquish the right that his wife has the right to sell than to relinquish Paris, which he's getting right now. But ask the Gemara, so there are three rights that when the husband says dinat dvarim, he may be relinquishing. One is Paris. One is the right that his wife should now have the right to sell these nechsim alug. And the third is that he should be the yoyrish. So we're saying that we're giving it the most limited definition, and we're saying that the husband relinquished the right that he could block his wife from selling it. Why don't we say that what he relinquished was the right to be a yoyrish? That when his wife dies, he yarshens it. Ve'ema asked the Gemara that he relinquished the right of Yerusha. Answers the Gemara, Amar Abaye Misa Shchicha, Mechira La Shchicha. Everybody, unfortunately, is going to pass away. Not everybody sells their property. So therefore, we have to choose how to define the most limited definition of his statement. We're going to say that he walked away from something which is not necessarily going to happen. Which, again, as we said, the husband says, the wife selling it, rather than saying, which is the person passing away, from that he's not going to, that he's not going to walk away from. says the Gemara, Rav Ashi Amar, if somebody said, why, again, are we defining, when he made this statement, we say that he meant specifically from relinquishing the right that he's giving his wife the right to sell the property, says the Gemara, because that is what the wording indicates, says Rav Ashi. He said, B'nechasayich, he spoke about it, my right to your property. And I didn't speak about the Paris, that I'm retaining, B'nechasayich, and I didn't speak about Le'achemisa. So the question, so we see that people, the Gemara just said a very important statement, and that is that a person, the person is more interested in what he has currently versus what he will have perhaps in the future. But Sina Tav Mikora, and the Ritvaz has a very interesting discussion. He says that there was a community that had a tzedakah fund, and the tzedakah fund was used for Ramei Balanes, for tzedakah Ramei Balanes. But this community did not have day schools, yeshivas, for the young children, and they wanted to begin another fund for supporting the local yeshiva, the local day school. And the gaboyim of the tzedakah of Ramei Balanes said, wanted to block it. They said, if there's going to be two funds, obviously it will adversely affect the tzedakah fund that's already in existence. And the question was, do they have such a claim or not? And Ritvaz, based on what we're learning in our Gemara, that taught us that when something is young, that's what's most important, says the Ritvaz, the same, that's all we're going to have to explain here as well, that when the children are young, it's so important that we should train them properly because we don't know what's going to be in the future. Only when we give them the solid foundation can we be comfortable. Says the Gemara. We learnt in the Mishnah, Rehuda Oima, Lo'elam ho'aychel peri peris, that the husband is entitled to the peri peris, unless he writes, Dinu dvarim, enli b'nechosayich b'perisayim peri perisim ad oylam. Tan Rabbanan, so the Brisa describes, Eilam peris, ve'elam peri peris. Hechnis lo'y karka, if she brought property into the marriage, vas so peris, and they produce peris, that's what's called peris. Mocha peris, those peris were sold. The lokach mehen karka, and karka was bought with those peris, and that second karka, osa peris, makes peris, that's called harei hein peri peris, that's going to be considered peri peris. And we learned in Yehuda that a person, the husband, does not walk away from the peri peris unless he declares, din advarm enli ben chosayich, or peri perisayin ad oilam. He boiled Rabbi Yehuda. That Rabbi Yehuda just required that he make this very strong statement. Peri peris dafka, that only if he said those words, what does that mean? Now he walks away from the peri peris. Oy ad oilam dafka. In other words, does he have to, what makes this statement strong? Is the ad oilam one makes it strong or the peri peris? Adama, or maybe to make the statement have the strength that he wants to have, you have to have Dama Tavayu Dafka. Only if he makes the statement it's in its entirety, as it was stated in the Mishnah, then he's walking away. Says the Gemara, Imtim Tzolayma, Peri Peris Dafka, the fact that he mentioned the Peri Peris is what gives the statement its strength. So then why did the Mishnah add Oilam Lamali? Why did the Mishnah have to add the words add Oilam? Answers the Gemara, Kamashman, the Kivin the Kosla Peri Peris, will say that the Mishnah means to teach us that once he stated Peri Peris, it's command the Kosla ad Oilam Dami. That Locha views it as if he wrote ad Oilam. Rintim Tzolayim ad Oilam Dafka, that Oilam is what makes the statement have its strength. So then we have a question, Peri Peris Lamali, why did he have to say Peri Peris? Answers the Gemara, Hakamashmon, that Afakav the Kosla Peri Peris, what the Mishnah is teaching us, that even if he wrote the words Peri Peris, only ikasavlai ad oilam in, only if you add the words ad oilam will it be effective. Eloi, but if he didn't add the words ad oilam, loy, it would be ineffective. Vimtim tsloima, and if we'll follow the opinion that tavayu dafka, that you have to have both the words peri peris and ad oilam, the question is tante lomeli, why indeed do we have to have both statements? Says the Gemara Tzricha, we have to have both statements. Dikasla peri peris, if he only wrote peri peris, and he didn't add the words like kasulat oilam, how to have a mina, we would perhaps say peri peris to the oil. He's not entitled to peri peris. Our peri peri the peris, the third generation's oil. That's why to make sure that we don't have that be the case. Lachi itzruch, he has to write the word ad oilam. Vikasula ad oilam. If he wrote the word ad oilam, for like kasula peri peris, and he didn't write peri peris, have mina la oilam. That when he said the word oilam, a peris kai, it's only going to the peris, but he's not being masalik himself from peri peris la oilam. Lachi itzruch. That's why he had to write peri peris to show that that oilam goes on all of the statements and that all of the elements of the statement that he made. Ibailu. So now ask the Gemara. Kasla din advarma elim bin chasayich or beperi peris. Mash yachem peris. Because he only mentioned the peri peris. He didn't mention the peris. So now the question is, mash yachem peris. Do we say, since he only mentioned peri peris, so we assume beperi peris salk nafshe, he walked away for the peri peris, but mi peri loy salk nafshi. Adilma mikomeli salk nafshi. He walked away from everything. Says the Gemara, pshita the mikomeli salk nafshi. It's obvious that he walked away from everything. The Amrit, if we're going to define or explain that what he meant to say was mi peri peri salk nafshi. However, mi peri loy salk nafshi. So the question is, kiven dechlinu le peris, if he walked away from the peris, since he's eating the peris, so where will there ever be peri peris? So it must be that he meant the peris as well. Ask the Gemara, says the Gemara Tamech, Rehuda Aymer, in our time we learned in our Mishnah, Rehuda Aymer lo'elam o'echel peri peris, that he continues to eat the peri peris. But again, why is there a discussion, according to this reasoning, asked the Gemara, why is there a discussion of peri peris? If he still has a right to the peris, kiven dechlinu l'peri, peri peris mehecha. Then where, according to where you're learning now, where did the peris come? Ella, what? How must we understand the Mishnah? That even though the husband, has a right to eat the peris, that doesn't mean he eats them all. And since it doesn't mean that he ate them all, there were leftover peris. What did they do with those leftover peris? They went and bought property with those leftover peris. And that's how we have peri peris. Hachanami, that's what we'll have to explain, that there's peri peris, but the shire. And that's why we now have a question. If the person says that he's walking away from the peris, but he didn't mention peri peris, so now we've been able to explain how there is possibly peri peris. And now that we've been able to explain how there are possibly peri peris, we could now begin to discuss, does the husband have rights to them? Because he didn't mention them. Or do we say that he doesn't have rights to them because he said, "Miperia ad oilam."